Clan na Gael is the most bagpipe-friendly show on CFRU FM 93.3. Join me, John Fahey, on Sundays and start your own Celtic Kitchen, Cayley. Own Celtic Kitchen, Cayley.
Action Read Community Literacy Centre is looking for new volunteer tutors. 4 out of 10 people aged 16 to 65 struggle with reading, writing, math, and other essential skills. Many adults here in Guelph are looking for support in reading job postings, calculating budgets, applying for benefits, and participating in community life. Action Read tutors are trained to help adults work from their current skills to reach their goals in work, learning, and life. If you can spare a couple of hours a week for the next year, you can make a big difference working one-on-one with an adult learner. Action Read has a terrific suite of tools and resources and a wealth of experience to help new tutors develop their skills teaching math, reading, writing, and computer basics. For more information or to volunteer, call 519-836-2759. That's 519-836-2759 or visit us online at actionread.com.
Hey everybody, I'm Kelly Jones and you're listening to Pioneer Radio.
Let's talk about radio because radio is so good.
I'm going to tell you something, Flacca, and I want you to listen tight.
Telling stories to regular folks is not a trivial thing.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Even if it's hard to explain, even if you know they don't really want to hear it, not really, I urge you to give it a try.
You have my undivided attention.
Take a chance, find the words, find the metaphor, share the beauty, tell them a story.
Today on Pioneer Radio, we're going to stray pretty far from the holiday spirit. In fact, we're going to talk about the opposite of good feelings, open arms, forgiveness, and charity. Today's show is about revenge.
Ah, Kirk, my old friend. Do you know the Klingon proverb that tells us revenge is a dish that is best served cold?
The only verdict is vengeance. A vendetta.
I'll give you one more chance. And if you don't clear out now, there'll be real trouble. I mean it.
Now, somewhere, somehow, someone's gonna pay.
Hello. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Revenge is a dish best served with pinto beans and muffins.
Whichever way you like it, the point is that revenge is served. On purpose. By one person to another. Probably the person who serves it was wronged in some way and wants to get even. You know the formula, right? Captain Kirk strands you on a deserted planet. Step 1. Find a way to steal a spaceship. Step 2. Search the galaxy for Captain Kirk. Step 3. Leave him in the middle of nowhere with no hope of escape. In short, abandon him the way he abandoned you. Seems like a pretty straightforward plan. And when revenge is successful, it tends to follow the same kind of structure, give or take some minor details. Today on Pioneer Radio, we're going to look at the idea of justice behind acts of revenge. And I think we're going to find that it's not so straightforward after all.
Slip inside the eye of your mind. Don't you know you might find a better place to play?
Let's all start off on the same page, though. Here is a basic story of revenge that doesn't take place in space. It's pretty funny, and I think we would call it successful. It has all of the necessary features of revenge.
basically from day one, she made my life miserable. Like, while I was unpacking my things on the first day I had moved in, she basically knocked on my door and told me to keep it down. And I was like, I'm moving. It's daytime still. So she basically kept that up. I was there for a year, and she kept that up for the entire year, but it escalated quite a bit, where she started writing me kind of harassing letters telling me about how I was causing her medical conditions, and she told her doctor about me, and because of my music. But I wasn't like a partier or anything. I never had like, you know, crazy things going on in my apartment. It's just the reasonable enjoyment of my music occasionally. And she didn't like that. She complained to, like ulcers and, you know, like stress related things because I was keeping her up. But it was never late. Like, I was never up late. I had a job. So,
first, the Avenger had a reason to get even. She had been wronged on several occasions by her neighbor. So the main ingredients for revenge are a victim and a clear victimizer.
Yeah, so there was nasty letters. She had talked to a few of the neighbors who didn't live anywhere near me. Like, they were on a different floor, but they were now against me, and the landlord was calling. And I wondered at one point if she was actually listening to my conversations that I was having inside my apartment, because I remember complaining once to someone, like, well, she's not even, you know, contacted the bylaw office about this. I haven't had any official complaints lodged, so I can't believe she's going to the landlord and they're threatening me with things. And like that night, basically a bylaw officer showed up. The bylaw officer didn't know what to make of it either, because she's like, I honestly can't hear anything while I'm standing outside your apartment. And I was like, I know, this has been going on forever and it's driving me nuts. So at one point, I think I fell asleep with a cassette player playing, and so it just kept flipping over to the other side the whole night. And I didn't realize this. I was really sick, and so I woke up the next morning and I was sick in the bathroom, and I heard her outside of my apartment, like, banging on the door, cursing and calling me names and insults. And I was like, I'm barfing right now. Go away.
The next necessary component of revenge seems to be some sort of breaking point, where the victim just can't take it anymore and becomes an avenger. This is a big deal because it marks a point where the victim stops being passive and starts plotting the downfall of the one who did her wrong.
So my friends knew about this, and I had since moved now, like, this is years later, and I have a couple of really good friends where if it's our birthdays, we never celebrate on the actual day, it's always a different day, but we'll arrange something where there's a nice meal, but there's also like some kind of special or crazy event that the other two plan for the one person. So for my birthday celebration, they basically came armed with gifts that included a balaclavas and stink bombs. She's like, we're going to get revenge on your neighbor, your old neighbor.
Now the victim needs some sort of plan and needs to execute that plan. For the most part, we think of revenge as time-consuming and premeditated. It takes a lot of effort to switch from being a victim to an avenger, from being passive to being aggressive, from being wronged to getting even, especially if, and this seems fairly common, the wrong done is intended to trap the victim in his or her role as victim. For the victim of a wrong, it's hard enough to convince oneself that the action is possible, let alone to take action. In this story, for example, the victim had to move away before she felt empowered enough to take revenge. She had to get distance from her wrongdoer and distance from her role as the victim in that relationship before she could get even.
This is years later.
Yeah, years later, and we're like, okay, we got to make sure that she still lives there. And I said, well, you know, she always had things in her windows that were very recognizable. And so we drove by and we're like, yep, they're still there. So our plan was so that she knew basically why this was being done to her. We wrote a friendly letter that got taped to her door, basically, and it's on the topic of revenge. I think the opening line was like, "You smell that? That smells like revenge to me." Really childish. Like, we're grown-ups here, but it was a lot of fun. So what we had done is one night when we drove over there with this letter and the stink bombs, is they were the kind that need to be smashed on the floor for the chemicals to mix. This is so ridiculous.
I love it.
So So we basically quickly stomped on the stink bomb, like right outside her apartment door, taped the note on, knocked on her door, and ran out. And we don't know how this story ended, but we assume like the whole apartment building stunk, which is fine because I, like, you know, the neighbors and the landlord were against me and causing me problems as well. So right. That's basically how it ends. We left like and drove away cackling like crazy people.
But here's the thing. Now that we know how revenge typically works, we can ask, how even do we get when we get even? How important is a sense of equal justice in stories of revenge? In an academic article called Revenge is Never a Straight Line, Transgressing Heroic Boundaries, Medea and the Female Body in Kill Bill, Dr. Ian Reilly investigates the nature of revenge narratives. More specifically, Dr. Reilly establishes a notable difference between everyday perceptions of revenge and gendered perceptions of revenge. After all, don't we tend to find it more disturbing when a woman seeks ultraviolent revenge on a wrongdoer, while a masculine avenger is more often portrayed as a hero? Dr. Reilly's aim, though, with this article, is to show how a revenge narrative is transformed or transgressed when its central character is a female figure. Dr. Reilly was unavailable to talk about this article in time for today's show, but here's a stand-in, reading the part about Kill Bill's revenge narrative that's relevant for us.
In the film's opening scene, the pregnant bride's story seemingly ends just as its beginning, with the unseen self-touting masochistic Bill putting a bullet in Beatrix's head. Here Tarantino plays with or elicits the audience's sympathies in a way that makes the audience complicit in all of the bride's future endeavors. The audience's identification with Beatrix is important because the viewer recognizes two things that are reinforced at length in both volumes. The bride has been brutally wronged, and those responsible for her predicament should be punished.
Yes, Beatrix was wronged in an ultraviolent way. And yes, if you've seen the Kill Bill movies, you'll know that she exacts her revenge in ultraviolent ways. But the key thing to note is, in a revenge narrative, the victim and the wrongdoer are not alone. The audience has a say in how necessary and how successful the revenge ultimately will be. What I mean is, the audience is at least as important in judging the nature of revenge as the avenger is while he or she is planning it. And if we buy it, that is, if we're sympathetic to the avenger no matter what, then their actions are just okay.
Of course, the audience's emotional investment in Beatrix's character builds with every injustice she suffers. From being rented out indiscriminately by a hospital orderly to would-be rapists, to being buried alive, which ultimately problematizes how viewers respond to the bride's heroic project. As an audience, we also take delight in Beatrix's small triumphs, like the wiggling of her big toe and her use of chopsticks following her extensive training period. Part of Tarantino's project here is to create an ideal audience, one that will support Beatrix's actions as the film progresses, irrespective of how violent or shocking those actions may be.
The important thing here is that the audience will condone Beatrix's revenge, no matter how violent, or, in other words, no matter how far the revenge goes above and beyond the wrong done. Once the victim in a revenge narrative is shown to be absolutely sympathetic, that character can get away with anything. And this means something. In our opening story about the woman and her neighbor, we could laugh with the woman who takes revenge because we thought of her as being the hero of the story and we felt for her plight. We assumed that the hero's revenge would then involve a dispensing of justice equal to the harm inflicted, so a wrong for a wrong. trading a stink bomb for a nuisance, getting even at a 1-to-1 ratio. But in the Kill Bill scenario, the line between hero and villain becomes blurry when the Avenger, although sympathetic, is so driven by revenge that she will exact it at any cost, irrespective of the just or unjust nature of her actions. How important is it that revenge involve a sense of equal justice? Well, it's important insofar as what was a simple definition of revenge has been turned into a paradox. The problem is that we wanted to rectify wrongdoing, and we consider those who right wrongs and triumph over evil to be heroes. However, because an avenger is always first a victim, we believe that they can do no wrong. So it is acceptable for an avenger not only to get even with their wrongdoer, but to punish them further. At which point, the hero turns into a bad guy who inflicts some wrong, and the bad guy then turns into a victim and a potential avenger. So if a revenge narrative takes the idea of getting even too loosely and doesn't focus on the sense of equal justice that we should mean when we say even, morality goes topsy-turvy. Good guys become bad guys. Previous bad guys have justifiable reasons to take their own revenge. The idea that revenge can overstep the bounds of what we would normally call good or bad seems kind of abstract, and maybe kind of trivial if it's just a matter of misunderstanding the words getting even. But I'll submit to you that the fuzziness of acceptable revenge is actually pervasive in our culture. Take, for instance, all of the wonderful children's books written by Roald Dahl. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. The Twits. The Witches. George's Marvelous Medicine. The BFG, James and the Giant Peach, Matilda. These classics are tales in which children end up triumphant. Often, these children have hard-knock lives before they gain the upper hand over the adults that held them down. George mixed a concoction out of household toxins and feeds it to his evil grandmother. And James crushes his aunts to death underneath said Giant Peach. Matilda scares her fascist principal into madness.
Once upon a time, there was a girl named Matilda.
Hi, Dad.
Get in the car, Melinda.
Matilda!
Whatever!
Who was extraordinary in every way.
Pretty soon you'll be able to do any multiplication, whether it's 2 times 7.
14!
Or 13 times 379.
4,927.
Wow. She can multiply large sums in her head.
So can a calculator.
But in a world where grown-ups make all the rules.
I'm smart, you're dumb.
I'm big and you're small.
I'm right.
And you're wrong.
In a school where the principal...
In this school, I am God!
...has no principles.
Yes, Miss Trunchbull,
sir.
The Trunchbull used to be in the Olympics. Shot put, javelin, hammer throw.
She will discover...
Somebody's gotta teach her a lesson.
Deep inside herself.
You should believe in whatever power you think you have inside of you.
A secret weapon.
I did it with my powers.
To even the odds.
No more Miss Nice Girl.
These are stories that empower children, and so of course this isn't an argument for a more conservative line in children's literature. That's not the point. The point is that these are first and foremost revenge stories. And in order to be successful, in order to be heroes and good guys, the children in these stories must perform what we would normally call bad deeds.
Hi, what's up?
To close today's show on revenge and the fuzzy lines it draws between right and wrong, We'll leave you with one more true and hilarious story of revenge.
Okay, so there's this guy named Brian Bethinger. He was 1 year younger than me, in a grade younger than me. Actually, maybe two, because he was in my sister's grade. Anyways, doesn't matter. One day, he tried to stab me with a pencil, and my friend Sean Common intervened. He was from Scotland. He was really cool. We used to hate each other, but then we got into a fight during gym class, and after the fight, we were best friends. So we were best friends, and my best friend came in when I needed him and intervened and took away the pencil from Brian Bethinger just before I got onto the bus. So anyways, I vowed to fight him the next day in the morning. So when I got onto the bus, I was like, tomorrow morning in front of the school.
Did people in Manitoba not fight in the afternoon? Because usually you meet someone after school to fight with them. Why did you decide to fight in the morning?
Because we're rural kids and we need to get home somehow. So if you lived in a city and you can just walk home, you can fight in the afternoon. But if you live in the country and you need to get a bus home, you have to reschedule and come as soon as you get off the bus in the morning. Okay, so we met in the morning. I was wearing my Ramones shirt, my favorite band of the time. And we fought, and I got him down, and he fell on his stomach, and I started to punch him. Anyways, this was after he ripped my Ramones shirt, and I was really pissed off. A quick side story, this one guy that lived right by me really hated me and said I was spanking him, Brian Bethinger. So he started to call me Spanky, but my really good friend Sean Common started to call him Spanky. And so he tried to get people to call me Spanky for 2 days. But guess what? His nickname still to this day is Spanky, because my best friend reversed it and started calling him Spanky, and people still in the town call him Spanky. So, yeah. Anyways, so Brian Bethinger had ripped my shirt, but I still beat him in the fight by not spanking him, but punching him in the kidneys. Okay, after the fight, I was still mad because he ripped my Ramones shirt. Okay, so yeah, he ripped my Ramones shirt. So until I said he had to pay for my Ramones shirt, but he wouldn't pay for it. So I stole his skateboard and put it into my locker. And then I brought it home. And then a cop came to my house and said that I had to return the skateboard and took me to the police station. But at the police station, they said, "Don't worry, we know this kid, Brian Bethinger. He is a trouble." And in fact, to this day, he's in big trouble because he went to court for like break and enter or something. And then when the judge said that he was like gave him the sentence, he said, "I'm going to kill you," to the judge, and got a way worse sentence. I read about this in the newspaper. Anyways, so the kid has not learned any lessons. But back to what I did with the Ramones shirt. Because I was really pissed off that he had ripped my Ramones shirt, I went home and turned this shirt that was like, all it said is like Daytona Beach or something. I turned it inside out. It was just a white shirt then, and I wrote like rip marks on the sleeve saying "rip here," and then said "Brian Bethinger is my hero," because I knew I couldn't get away with saying like "I hate Brian Bethinger" or something, so I had to make it like sarcastic. They still made me like turn my shirt inside out. So I was kind of angry about that. So having gone to HTML camp like the summer before that, I knew how to make websites on GeoCities easily enough. So I made a website on GeoCities that was all the reasons why Brian Bethinger is a loser. And I printed off little pieces of paper with the website address on them and distributed them in the school. Anyways, it eventually got back to the principal, and he made me take down the website. And that's my story about Brian Bethinger. And the other day, my mom called. They just moved, and they're getting rid of, like, a bunch of my old clothes. And my mom said, do you want to keep this shirt that says Brian Bethinger is my hero? And I said, yes, I do want to keep that shirt.
You've been listening to Pioneer Radio on CFRU 93.3. Special thanks to our story contributors, who will remain anonymous, and to Dr. Ian Riley and Andrew Robinson. See you next week.
Picture yourself in a living room. Your pipe and slippers set out for you. I know you think that it ain't too far. But I hear a call of a lifetime ring. Felt the need to get up for it. Oh, you cut out the middleman. You're free from the middleman. You got no time for the messenger. Got no regard for the thing that you don't understand. You got no fear of the underdog. That's why you will not survive. I wanna forget how convention fits, but can I get out from under it? Can I cut it out of me? Oh. It can't all be wedding cake. It can't all be boiled away. I try but I can't let go of it. Can't let go of it. Uh-huh. Cause you don't talk to the water boy. And there's so much you could learn, but you don't want to know. You will not back up an inch ever. That's why you will not survive. Tell you now, it may not go over well. Oh, and it may not be thought of well. No way that I spell it out. But you won't hear from the messenger. Don't wanna know about something that you don't understand. You got no fear of the underdog. That's why you will not survive. Right!
If you've made a pledge to CFRU during our recent Raise Your Voice fund drive, first of all, thank you. Now it's time to make sure your pledge finds its way to CFRU. Here's a surprise. Cash works. Just drop by your pledge at the station and pick up your gift at the same time. Or write a check to CFRU FM. You can drop it by or mail it to us at CFRU, UC Level 2, University of Guelph, Guelph, Ontario, N1G2W1. And then there's PayPal. Just visit our website at cfru.ca and choose the PayPal option. If you're out of town, we'll mail your gift to you. Regardless of which you choose, thank you for supporting campus community radio, CFRU FM.